This week on RSBNB Update, a bonanza of achievements this week, including love letters, meat tenderizers, and fruit. A reflection on Till Death Do Us Part, and the community question of quivers, sheaths, and wheelbarrows going too far. This is RSBNB Update, episode 697, recorded Thursday, November 8th, 2018. You better bring a wheelbarrow. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tannis and myself in this week covering the achievement bonanza this week. So what you're hearing is the achievement bonanza, over 130 new achievements added to game this week. 133 to be precise. They said over 130, but I think 133 is enough, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's plenty.
Have you gone out specifically hunting for any of them yet?
I haven't, because I'm not going to let up in certain things that I'm doing right now. But they look like they're going to be fun, and it's something I'm definitely going to participate in, because, you know, I kind of relate these achievements to, like, trophies, or, like, you know, like, for the PlayStation Store, I think it's, like, trophies, and then Steam, you know, has their achievement kind of things, and so this, to me, is kind of, like, in the same kind of grain, and I do like to do that stuff. It's just that I can't be distracted to do it right now.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. You know, when we got this update, I thought, oh, this is something that should definitely drop every so often with the game. You know, maybe what, every 4 to 6 months, add a drop of, you know, 50 to 100 new achievements. You think that'd be too many?
No, I think that'd be good, because, I mean, in theory, we should be dealing with new content on a regular basis, and so you need those achievements to come in and, you know, kind of have achievements for that content, as well as just adding more, making the rune score an actual relevant thing, make it what it's supposed to had been. You know, I mean, it came in, it had a lot of fanfare. We were excited about it. And then I don't know about you, but it just kind of silently went away, and I never really thought about it much.
Yeah.
But, you know,
and you know, there's a perfectly good reason for that. The achievement system was supposed to be one of the big updates of 2017, but I'm sure everyone remembers how that turned out. And well, that's probably why there wasn't much emphasis placed on them. So
somewhere Sirion's going, bad interface, stop. Stop, bad interface. Yeah. I can just see him having nightmares.
It was more the nightmares for that episode. So, anyways, I think we can go through some of these achievements. There's definitely some eyebrow raisers in the bunch here. So the four that they highlight on the news post are handles for forks, attempting to buy fork handles. I'm not sure why that's a special one. I think it has some pop culture reference to a UK TV show or the like.
Apparently, because it doesn't ring a bell for me.
Yeah. Next up is Cops and Robbers, unlock all perks in Heist, the Heist minigame. Yeah, that minigame that came out all those years ago, for those who haven't done it yet. Unlock all the perks in that minigame.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess you can come off from boosting for a minute to actually unlock the other stuff.
Yeah. Let's see, when did this come out? You have a guess for what year it came out, Heist?
Heist was 2015?
Okay, 2014. 14.
Okay, I was close.
I thought we were going to see it. I feel like it was closer to 11 than 14. But okay. Yeah, I only played that a few times, so this is definitely one that I would have to do if I wanted to tick this achievement off.
You know, it's a good time for it, though, because I know there are players that will really do a bunch of heists before a double XP weekend if they're going to do one of the skills in it, because it's just it's so good with its bonus XP.
Yeah, it's like stealing creation, except for thieving and the like. So
yeah, and what's the other one? Hunter, maybe?
Yeah, Hunter sounds like the other skill that was involved. Mm-hmm. The next one was Lifesaver be saved 50 times by the Sign of Life effect. And this is not retroactive, so it starts this past Monday. It would start counting up.
I will have that in no time.
Yeah.
Okay. Accidentally, too. I mean, I won't even mean to, but it will.
I wonder if the defense cape counts on this.
I hope so, because that's what does it for me.
Okay. We'll have to check that. Listeners, if you know, have a look. You want a pizza me? Sample all of the listed pizzas.
That's cool.
that's a nice play on words, isn't it?
Yeah, that's so cool.
Okay, so there's also a list of achievements on the RS wiki, and there was some question when this came around. Are we just to figure out? Like, are we just to take a guess as to where these come from or whatnot? But it turns out that there's actually a section put up on the RS wiki that went through this and went through some of these achievements and put a list together. But before that, I just want to talk about a couple of the other ones that are jumping out at me, then we'll go back to the list. So if you're looking at your combat achievements and then you go to general, you can find one called Dragonstone, Dragonstone, Dragonstone. Which is to kill a Dragonstone dragon while wearing Dragonstone armor and Dragonstone jewelry, using Dragonstone bolts with an inventory full of Dragonstone. And that Dragonstone armor is still going for around 30 plus mil. And it's level 50 hybrid, so it doesn't really serve much benefit for us. So, there's that one. Let's see, continuing on down the list, unlocking expertise, unlock all the listed abilities, don't choke, eat food, then drink a Sarah-Doman brew less than a second apart.
Oh, that's rock brewing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I want to draw everyone to the farming section because there's actually about four new farming achievements with this that you can get as well. So the first one is Smartest Harvest. Harvest 60 things from fruit tree patches in 4 minutes or less.
Ooh.
And that's actually not
too... Have you done that one,
Shane? Yes, I did. I did. It's not hard to do. You got to, of course, tilt your farm runs in such a way that you're going to be going to all the... to all the fruit tree patches first, but you can do that because, you know, you have a direct teleport to Herblore Habitat, you have a direct teleport to Melier, you have a direct teleport to Lilletia, you have a close enough teleport to Catherby, and you just run from the Lodestone and check that one. Brimhaven, I would recommend using a chipped house teleport tablet to Brimhaven. That's going to be the easiest way to get to that one. And then the longest ones are going to be the two gnome ones, the recommended path I'd say for that is to go to Melier, take the glider, and then glide down to Gnome Village, and then go through the Elkoi path, and then take the Spirit Tree up to Gnome Stronghold. And then you can definitely do it in 4 minutes or less. I think I did mine in about 3:30.
Oh, really?
So, okay. And you know, to increase the yield, because normally you only get... You normally only get six per, so that, you know, 7 times 6 is 42. So what you want to do to increase the yield is, of course, have your Green Fingers potion, your Green Fingers aura active, because that has the ability to have a chance at increasing the yield you get. Your Master Farmer's outfit will help as well. And the biggest help is, of course, going to be a Giant Ant Familiar. And that'll put you over 60.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Do you always use that on your runs?
If I'm doing a full tree run, I will bring a giant ant just so I can get the most out of it, because most times in that case it would be palms, and those give coconuts, and those are really valuable.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So that's how you do that part of it. There's also Herb Your Enthusiasm. Harvest each of the listed herbs. So that's basically every herb that you get from – every herb seed you get from Killing Slayer plus the – plus the ones from Herblore Habitat and the Wilderness.
You got to do the Herblore Habitat ones?
Yes, but for those that want to do the Herblore Habitat one, this one is worth 20 rune score. What you need to do for that one is, you know, people always think, oh, I need to go do Hunter there, or I didn't need to go do something else. But what you can do there is you can just go down underneath, kill things, you know, bring your scythe, and basically just AoE everything down there, get the maximum amount of points, and then set up your creatures up top. There's a guide on the RS Wiki as to what you'll get for it, and you can basically have it set up so you get nothing but herb seeds, and then what you do is you just check in and you get a collection of herb seeds from doing that.
Well, fair enough.
And, you know, this is how I make all my own juju farming potions. I don't buy my juju farming potions. I make those myself as well.
Well, I'll keep you in business because I'm not doing it.
Well, I don't sell them. I keep them for myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I could. But anyways, now here's the big one, the big kahuna. I haven't even tried this one yet. Got to patch them all. Have something planted and living in every farming patch. And see, this one is difficult because, there are also, no, that's not supposed to be going again. Got a little, the Google Chrome tab got a little bit crazy there. But, you know, this means you basically need to run through the entire world and make sure that everything is growing everywhere. So this means you're going to have to go to, you're going to have to go to Miscellany and et cetera. You're going to have to go to Prif. You're going to have completed the, have completed the Tyrannan test set because there is a mushroom patch down there. You're going to need to make your way all the way to Harmony from the Great Brain Robbery and whatnot. You're going to have to make your way to the desert. You're going to have to make your way to the swamps. So that's going to be a fun one to do. And, you know, I'm thinking with that one that it might be about time to complete that elf task set to unlock that mushroom one.
Yeah, you want to do that anyway. It's just that Quiver's too good to not have. And I guess you could, I mean, you could use gardeners, right, for all the trees and allotments.
Well, see, here's the thing. You just need to have something growing in it. So theoretically, if you went around to everything and just put something in it, it would be growing until the first cycle. And if you can do this in under 20 minutes, nothing's going to get diseased because the shortest cycle is 20 minutes for a herb.
Man, that seems like it'd be tight, though, with all those and little niche places.
And
to
I mean,
go.
If you do daily farming runs and whatnot, you can reduce this and not, and just make sure you don't, you know, clear some of them away at the end of it. So, that's a fun one that I found on the list here.
It'll definitely be interesting.
Yeah,
it'd be fun to try maybe, but I could see it getting frustrating too.
Yeah, definitely. So, now. There's also some serious questions on this list as well. Those are the ones that I am most interested in, of course, the farming runs. But there's also some really, really stupid ones, too. This is not a dating website. Or, sorry, this is not a dating site. Open a love letter from a JMod.
Well, how are you going to get that?
JMods have been out handing out love letters this week.
Oh, is that the Valentine's thing?
Yes.
Oh, I opened one. Well, I didn't know who gave it to me, well, but that's cool.
Yeah, as long as it came from a JMod, you should have got the achievement.
Okay. Well, I don't know who else would have given me one.
There's also one called Livid. You need to go talk to Pauline Polaris in New Varrock after unlocking everything from the Livid Farm.
Ugh.
Yeah, man. I know. There's one called Daily Scape, which is completing 10 daily challenges in a row.
Yeah. You know, that one, I know people were really bothered about that one. It doesn't bother me as much just because it's just one of 130 achievements we got just this week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so you don't have to do it, but it is very contradictory, right? Like, from what they say they want to do, and then they give you achievement to do daily.
Yeah,
skin.
I think they're just trolling the community at that point. So
yeah, I think so.
There's also one for bank standing.
The only problem is you won't know if you got it.
Why?
Your
yeah, right. You got to stand in the bank for an hour.
Okay.
So there's that. Then, I mean, we get to the truly absurd about this.
Okay.
Beating your meat. Use a meat tenderizer on a super cow.
You want to do what? Using meat tenderizer on a cow?
On a super cow. So you need to be on a Slayer task to have one of the super cows spawn. It's an elite Slayer creature.
I still don't know where meat tenderizer comes from.
Recipe for disaster chest rewards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Do you get the reference, Shane?
Unfortunately, yes.
Oh, okay. I'm surprised. I wasn't too sure you'd get that one.
Yeah. and I mean, obviously, you're having a chuckle about it, so there you go. There's one called Catch and Release. Throw a raw fish onto a fishing spot. After you catch it. Gives you a fun little message about that.
That's good.
Captain, my captain, requires the player to unlock the captain title at the player-owned ports, which you should get if you already have it by just going into your port, so that's fun. There's also one called Port Knight is an achievement that requires you to send off at least one voyage from the player-owned port for every day for 14 days.
Okay.
But, you know, little achievements like this around the way. Other ones claiming rewards from Motherlode Maw consecutively. Rune Dust to the Rune Spear, hand in Rune Dust to the Rune Spear is another one of them. So, you know, like they're everywhere and whatnot. And in general, these achievements are something that I think some people can do easily. Some of them are going to be a little bit more difficult to do looking forward through them. So,
yeah.
Another one, very resourceful, visit the 20 Dungeoneering resource dungeons. So just little things like that. And I mean, I'm getting the sense now that if you want an achievement hunt in RS, you can. So,
yeah, I mean, we had a decent amount before, but now you have quite a bit more. So.
Yeah,
it's cool.
We've come a long way. Defeat a Raxor at 100% rage, 200%, and 300% in rage.
I need an achievement just to defeat the damn thing.
Yeah,
like, first time.
There's also one for penguin hunting. ICUKGP. Find the 12 different penguins.
Okay.
But yeah, you get the general idea here of these. I think my favorite ones are the farming ones, but that's to be expected, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, I like a lot of them are like just your daily little piddles, you know, that that if you're doing, you're going to get these achievements anyway, so that's kind
of
cool.
Apparently for the meat-beating one, the cow has a 1 in 1,000 chance of spawning.
That's going to take a while. You're going to have to beat your meat a lot. Like, a lot. Or get really lucky.
I wish we were doing video right now so you could see me double face bombing.
One in 1,000 chance. Jeez. That reminds me of high school.
All right. I think we should move on. but anyways, you can find the full list of these new achievements this week at update.rsbmb.com. I'm going to try and complete the farming ones sooner rather than later. So,
but I'll probably do some of the dailies, I think.
Yeah, the daily ones. That's good. There's also the School of Jewels. Cut each of the listed gems.
Okay.
So, you know, we've probably done all these things before, but they're just adding them in now, and you're going to complete them eventually throughout the time. So all in all, I think this is a good update.
Yeah.
But, you know, before we move on, I have a couple more things to say before we get to the achievements. But first, I just want to tell everybody about what we're calling the Achievement Bonanza Fortnite. And I think we need the Bonanza theme song in the background for that one again. At rsbnb.com/sc/22, starting this coming Monday, November 12th at reset time, midnight UTC, we'll be running a RuneScore 2-week blitz where we track who determines who gets the most RuneScores over the span of 2 weeks. So think of this as a skill of the month or a skill of the fortnight, let's just say, except for RuneScore. So that's why it's called the Achievement Bonanza Fortnite. And bonus points to anyone who catches the references within the title of this page, Achievement Bonanza Fortnite. rsbnb.com/sc22. Skilling competitions 22. So full link to that, if you don't want to type that in, can be found in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. rsbnb.com/sierracharlie22.
So hold off for your achievements until then.
Until Monday, yeah.
Until Monday.
If you want to compete in this. And I think we already got about 6 people signed up for this, so we'll see how many we can get. But head on over there, pop your display name in, your email address if you want to be notified when it starts, and away we go. And I should note that, you know, if you change your display name during this, you won't be able to have your achievements tracked unless you PM me and have it changed back. So just keep that in mind, everyone. Okay.
Right on.
So we got a surprise this past weekend after we recorded the podcast. I don't know if I even told you about this, Tanis.
I don't think so.
So, Till Death Do Us Part. You know, we passed this off as the Halloween event. And yeah. Mm-hmm. there were some questions throughout it. You know, okay, you only need to stabilize the rift 16 times and you could have that complete by the middle of the month, effectively, by the middle of October. And lots of people did. But there's actually a really interesting thing to happen with this, and that's that looking into this, at the end, we had a huge surprise that Lucian appeared at the very end of this for a final boss fight. Now, you might be wondering, but Lucian died in Ritual of the Majorah.
Yeah.
So why is Lucian here? Well, it turns out that it's a manifestation of Lucian, a nightmare from Moya. It was Moya's worst nightmare. And this manifestation of Lucian appears, and he has – I forget how many life points he had. I know he was like level 50,000 or something along the lines of that. But you're hitting, you know, 2, 3Ks each time you're fighting him with that regard. And it's actually a really interesting fight with this, because it kind of gives the idea that, oh, maybe we're engaging in a boss fight and this is what a boss fight must feel like, because you're constantly, you know, hitting upwards of 2 and 3Ks, which is what all the top tiered PVMers hit, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's an interesting way to kind of whet people's appetite into what PVM could certainly feel like. But there's more with this. It turns out that, you know, Lucian died in Ritual of the Majorah, but with Moya, this aberration of Lucian was created by combining the powers of that memory that Moya had and her worst nightmare with the power of Zautak. And this was her supposed greatest fear, and that's why it manifested itself at Halloween. And the interesting part about this is that when you think about it, Zautak is something we've been skirting around the edges of. We know we're going to see more about that in Elite Dungeon 3 early next year. We felt rumblings of Zautak in the Pirate Quest earlier this year. And if you charge up the shard that you got for this event to its fullness, it will also, of course, mention Zautak. So factoring everything in with this and the fact that, you know, aside from the fact it took so long to work up to it, I think that the lore and the implications of Lucian appearing at the end of this and Moya explaining everything effectively kind of redeemed this event. At least it did for myself.
Well, that would make sense because you're heavy into the lore and all that. And it is cool. Like, it's very cool. But I don't think it addresses the major criticism that we had, which is it didn't feel like Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think that this is was an experiment for Jagex as much as it was an experiment to see how long the players would take to complete it. Because, you know, you give people 16 tries out of 31. That's, you know, every other day that they need to do this for a couple double ups probably. But, you know, they've long said that they feel that they can take the liberty at this point with RS that not everything needs to be traditional Halloween themed. And while I disagree with that on the large part, I think that had this had been marketed as though we're trying to prevent something really, really bad from happening here rather than just a slow ramp up to it, I think it would have got a better response in the community.
Yeah, you know, but I guess my only question is couldn't we take this event and plop it down in any month at any time of the year?
Yes.
And it would be the same.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, with a bit more ramp up and a little bit more background behind it, you know, it is World Event 4. I'm going to say that it is World Event 4, but it would have had, I think it's World Event 4 and everything but name, but had there have been more ramp up and there been more, you know, jumping for joy about it, let's just say from the Jagex end, they could have definitely marketed it as that publicly.
Could they though? Because like when I mean, I see mechanic wise, like on, you know, World Event 4, yes, but like from a thematic, from all the world events had gods in them. And I mean, Lucian's still not a god, right? I mean,
no.
So, I mean, every world event had, you know, we had Zaros and Ceridoman. We had, the Thunder Chicken and the other guy,
Tuska
Bandos. We had Tuska. So there's always a god involved in a world event, you know? So, like, this is more like a world timeout or something, kind of?
Well, like, well, not really, because when you look about it, Moya is one of Zamorak's top generals and led that charge in World Event 1. So, with Zamorak off doing who knows what, Moya is the next logical person to focus on from the Zamorak side of the equation.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but, like, there's no other side that you're fighting.
Right. And that's why I said, you know, this is World Event 4 in all but name. And had there had been this extra attempt to, you know, bring it in line with what we had known previously as world events, give like a specific ticker to work towards and whatnot throughout the month and market it as such that it's actually something that's not just a solo adventure, but an adventure for the entire community, that would make it World Event 4 in actual name.
To me, that would have made this better. Like,
right.
And I still don't know if I can buy into the world event side of things, but that would have made this an entirely different
And perspective. Like I said, it completely changed when I saw this end boss fight with Lucian involved.
I mean, that's, you know, it's fair. I mean, I'm glad there was something more to it than what we were getting. Yeah, I mean, there's been, let's see, with all the world events, there was always two sides except for Tuska, which we all kind of were on the same side. Yeah, really? You don't say.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I like what you're saying with how they could have done it. I don't know if you could have marketed it as a world event, but
well, if
to
they,
me,
if
that
they
would
wanted
make more
to
sense.
Had marketed it as a world event, they would have needed to add just a little bit more to it. But I think it's World Event 4 in all but name.
Well, and I want to see, I don't know. There has to be some kind of a God's presence. I mean, you got to have the factions, you know? I mean, what's the godless going to do if they can't stand around and tell you that all the gods suck and shouldn't be fighting for them anyway?
No.
I don't know.
And we also got the music unlock at the end of Chasm Desecrated, the remix of Temple Desecrated. which sounds a lot like Temple Desecrated, but it's slightly different. Let's give it a couple seconds. That's a good track for RS.
Yeah.
I must admit that. So I just wanted to inform everyone of that because I think everyone gave up on Till Death Do Us Part after they unlocked all the rewards and never went back to it. But, you know, there was messages that appeared every 2 hours on the weekend when the Lucian fight was happening. So if you did go there and did check it out, you would have seen this and maybe your opinions would have changed. So,
yeah. I mean, I think that definitely made it. You know, that made it better. But I am a firm believer in traditional Halloween events. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, because what if we gotten that at, like, Christmas time? Oh, my Lord. We'd be so disappointed.
Yep. I agree. Yeah. I agree. All right. So we're going to move on to the patch notes right now. And there's just two of them this week and a bunch of other typo fixes for this Till Death Do Us Part. And people were wondering why are there typo fixes for this event. Well, you can go back and watch the cutscenes. That's why there's typo fixes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that content is staying. I think you talked to Death to replay it, but I'm not 100% sure. All right. Large rune pouches now have a level 66 magic requirement to use.
Mm-hmm.
The backtrack on the backtrack ends up with having another requirement added to it. And, I mean, let's be real here. Level 66 magic for a large rune pouch. That's nothing. This should have been 90 or 95.
Shit, yeah, it should have been 99.
Okay. Because you're not going to know about large rune pouches as you're leveling up. And you're not going to use them in bulk unless you're, you know, all the way up there as most people who are doing high-end PVM with magic are. It's just not going to happen that way. So this should have been 95 plus.
At least, yeah.
So
you're not going to be doing that kind of content anything under 99 anyway.
Yeah.
You're not.
And I think there's also a psychological barrier as well to adding requirements in game that are 90 plus.
Yeah, so. I mean there might be, but I don't know why. I mean, why? We're not all level 50 noobs anymore.
You know? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say regarding that because when you think about it, what's the highest requirement in game right now? Aside from like herb lord potions and whatnot? Slayer stuff? Dungeoneering floors?
Yeah, probably Dungeoneering floors.
Okay. Yeah. And at the same time, you have to grind all these floors to get, you know, things like tokens for your gold accumulator and whatnot. So if you look at it that way, through that lens, 95 magic really isn't that high for something that allows you to save that many inventory slots. And find me a high-end PVMer who doesn't have 99 magic. Who is?
That's my argument. Right? Exactly. Yeah. Oh.
Or maybe the first one can be at level 66 and the others can be at 99.
Yeah.
No.
Or maybe they could just make it, you know, collar. Because that's what it was supposed to be,
but we'll get there. and it's once again possible to equip large rune pouches via the bank interface. So there's a bit of a little snafu with that. But in any case, let us move on to questions. But first, we'll just take a moment to tell everybody about Patreon this week. We'd like to start off by thanking some wonderful Patreon subscribers. This week, we got Cody T., Kyle, and Brock H. Thank you guys for your wonderful support of RSBNB Update. Now, you guys might be wondering, what exactly is this all about? Well, if you head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB, you can learn all about it there. But if you want to hear, continue listening. So for $1 a month, you get a mention in our show notes every week. You get early access to the show notes when we're able to post them early, and the ability to join our roundtable discussions. More on that in just a moment. And you'll, of course, continue to help RSBNB fund the costs of hosting and production of the show. For $3 a month, you get a special VIP rank on Discord, a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show, which are really good if you want to listen to that high-quality Bonanza track or the chasm-desecrated song that we just played. So that's what the high-quality stereo versions of that are for. And for $5 a month, you get a shout-out on the show every week and exclusive access to the clips that we use for the clip show each and every week, which are posted on Patreon after the episode goes up. And, you know, we do other things as well. We have our bonus show, which we're calling the Monthly Bit, focused around, you know, a specific issue in the RuneScape community, and we discussed that and released those. Last month, we talked about building a better beta. That one was released publicly just because it's so important, and we wanted to get it out. This month, we're going to be talking about the different sides of social media and community feedback in the RuneScape community, that is the official forums versus Reddit versus Twitter. That should be a fun one to talk about, shouldn't it?
Yeah, always.
Yeah. And for $30 a month, when we reach that tier, we'll be doing something called Inside RSVNB Update, where we'll be doing little interviews with the host and the production team and a little bit behind the scenes on how the show comes together and some sneak peeks of how the podcast setup works and how everything comes together and where we record the show. And if we reach $50 a month, we'll be doing something called the RSBNB Update Roundtable on the first Saturday of each month, where we'll just, you know, gather in Discord, play RuneScape for an hour and a half, and discuss everything and anything relating to RuneScape going on that week, whether it be the update or whether it be something going on in the RuneScape social sphere. This is the chance to just have a general, wide-ranging, free-flowing RuneScape discussion, and Patreon supporters are, of course, encouraged to join in the roundtable discussions via audio in our Discord. And for $100 a month, if we should ever get there, if you guys are ever so generous, we'll be doing something called Movie Night with Shane and Tannis, which will be a monthly movie night in Discord. We'll all sit down, watch the same movie, and there's a chance some Star Trek movies might make their way in. So this will be exclusive to Patreon supporters and special guests. So all of this and more at patreon.com/RSBNB. And once again, thanks to our wonderful Patreon supporters this week, Cody T., Kyle, and Brock H. Thank you very much. All right. You ready for this discussion topic? Wide-ranging discussion topic.
I'm ready. Yes. Let's do it.
Hey, guys. Panassius here with a couple of questions for you. First up, this huge stuff-up with the rune pouches. It was an obvious mistake because when it was first announced, the whole idea for different colours was just to allow the players to differentiate which pouch was for what. So, for example, if I had one that I use for the standard spellbook, full of fire and air runes for the spell and natures so I could high elk drops, I could make it one colour. And then, you know, for my ancient spells, I could make a different one with your death runes and such in it. You know, you could have one on the lunar spells. It was really just to help with the inventory management a bit. It was so obviously a glitch whereby they made them different items because of the colour and then forgot to stop the players from having multiples in their inventory. But again, we see that the high-level PVM community rant and throw tantrums, so Jagex reversed the reversal and have now let them keep it, making Magic even more OP than ever. So, my question for you is, should Jagex stop bowing and scraping to this highly vocal but generally small minority group, or should they continue to let them dictate what they want because they are so vocal? Secondly, if it is to remain, shouldn't they now allow the Priftinus quiver to hold multiple bots and arrows, or at least design a quiver that has the same functionality as the rune pouches and will allow players to put multiples inside and make the switching for range just as easy as it is for magic? Then, of course, we'll need to see a new design for melee weapons, you know, a new sheath or baldric to allow us to carry multiple weapons on our body, such as a dagger and claws for those fast hits, a maul, and, of course, our scythe all at once. And if that's the case, why can't we also get a wheelbarrow for our farming runs, where we can load all our compost, seeds, planks, and plant pots in, so we can save our inventory there too? Where does this type of thing end? Love to hear your thoughts on this. As in my opinion, Jagex are just running scared of the community at the moment and won't seem to do anything against what they demand for fear of upsetting that 1% or 2%. Now, my third point has to do with the OSRS numbers that Tanis was worried about last week and his opinion that they now may be carrying us. Let's remember that, yes, they did have 120k players on, but RS3 was down around 15 or 20k from what they normally would have had, as a lot were trying OS Mobile out. The issue with the numbers is that having one account gives access to both games, so there will be an opportunity to jump between both. Also, when I had a look, about 50% of the players were actually on the free-to-play worlds. Let's not forget also that RS3 brings in nearly 35% of the revenue in just MTX alone. Do you think it's now time to separate the memberships for both games? They could lower it a dollar or two if you just want to play one, increase $2 or $3 if you want access to both, and have the access to both included in the Gold Premier Club. It's been a controversial few weeks, but fingers crossed it'll all settle down soon. Anyway, I've talked long enough, so happy scaping to you both. Love to hear your opinions, and I'll see you in-game soon.
The wheelbarrow, eh? We had a good chuckle about love. That one.
Yes, I love it. This is perfect.
You know, this does ultimately come down to a question of, I think, either approving this fix before it went in and making sure there was no ambiguity between it, because I think that's what caused this whole problem in the beginning. And that's something that, you know, as a development team, they need to be looking into, is how do we avoid this kind of thing in the future, so we're not, you know, backtracking on our backtracks and having to add in these level 66 magic requirements along the way. That's one way of doing it. Another way is to, I don't know, I mean, when someone is QA testing an update, they're given, hey, this is the specification and this is what it's supposed to do. And if it's already got that Jagex signature on it and it does exactly that, it works. So for people who say this is something that QA should have caught, no, because you're basically said you're going to die room pouches, you're going to be able to have multiple of them, Jagex signs off on it, voila, there you go, you can have multiple of them, it's been signed off on. So it's not necessarily a QA issue in this case. So I think going back to the original approval of it, that's one way that we can avoid these snafus in the future. But beyond that, you know, it's like 4-tick auto attacking. It really is. Because 4-tick auto attacking is something that was in game since EOC came out and slowly but surely gained prominence to a point where it was used in all high end PVM encounters. And, you know, we look at the weapon diversity projects for melee and range now, and you see there are replacements in there for 4-tick auto attacking. So this is, you know, this is a trend in regards to the PVM community. Rather than breaking something and removing it from the game, they find a way to insert it into the game. And, you know, I think this goes back to a lot of our building a better beta discussion from that monthly bit in October, which everyone can find at the website update.rsbmb.com. And we go back to EOC for this, and then you look at old school. And old school brings their updates in, whether or not they're polled and the like. And, you know, you could say, sure, go to polling updates. But at the same time, is that the direction we really want to go again for RS3? I don't think it is. And because of that, I don't think that bending over to the community, and as it's seen in these cases, for the rune pouches is necessarily a good thing to be doing for this.
Yeah, I agree with that. It
should have just been pulled out the Tuesday after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that never happens anymore. And the same would never happen on the skilling side. They would have ripped that out without a second thought. But I totally agree. There is kind of like a rub there where between listening to what the community wants and doing what, you know, Jagex needs to do, what they think is right for the long-term health of the game, because Parnassus has a point. If you do this now, all this work and all this effort to bring the combat triangle within some kind of a balance, They just threw it all out the window.
Yeah, you're definitely heading towards an isosceles triangle in this case, with magic being the one that is, you know, skewed upwards.
Yeah, and I mean, Parnassus is right. So now what are we going to have to do? Add something for range and then add something for melee? You know, I mean, it's funny, you know, because
thought
the
about that
with the
because,
barrel,
because the quiver, the quiver would have been a good way of doing it for ranged. And yeah, the wheelbarrow comment sums this up quite well. And,
yeah.
But there is one downside with the wheelbarrow argument. There are things called pack yaks, and there are things called tool leprechauns.
Well, I mean, right. Hey, if you want, a special sheaf, like you said, we could make that with invention. So, I mean, you know, the problem is the original sin comes from allowing a vocal minority to dictate the direction of PVM in that respect.
Yeah, because these things are going to be absolutely required for PVM if they weren't already.
Yeah.
Which is not good.
Yeah, I don't think that's. I don't. You want. They should be driving the car. I mean, at the end of the day, they need to be the drivers. We don't want someone sitting in the back seat telling us how to drive. And that's kind of what's happening here. Because what if they had plans a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road that now they're going to have to, like, change or scrap or something else because you had to give in to somebody over a dyed pouch? Really? That was like the ground you gave up? You know, I think he's right.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd like to know who ultimately made this decision at the end of the day, and you know how high this went. To know, you know, can we leave this with the combat team that made the fix, or does this need to escalate to combat council, and should combat council have their supervisors look at it, and so on and so forth. I'd be interested to see how high this went up in discussing this, because this is something that should not happen, and it should not happen again, and there needs to be internal guidelines put in place so it doesn't happen again. And
well,
and based on what I know about how Jagex works, I want to be hopeful that they're going to do something like this. But every time we see a backtrack like this from the community regarding the combat, questions are raised, I think. And rightfully so.
Well, and it makes you wonder, like, when will they ever put their foot down with that community, with that, you know, subsect? It just seems like they will never, ever go against them. They will never do what, even when they're doing something for the longevity or the health of the general game. It's like at some point, I mean, that's kind of like having it's like having a kid, you know, and just letting them get away with whatever they want to get away with because you don't want to argue with them. I mean, nah, sometimes you better put your foot down. You know, I mean, I don't know, but that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm reluctant to comment on whether or not this is a case of just the combat side of it or if there was a specific reason behind this, because I don't know what the internal discussions were that happened. What I will say, though, is that this is definitely, and I agree with this, this is creating what looks like from the outside a situation where if a certain group of players or a certain type of players doesn't like an update, you can make enough noise about it, and presuming Jagex listens, you'll get it reverted.
Yeah, but it only ever, I mean, we can't draw a false equivalency here, right? Because this only ever happens with one group.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a quest that clan quest hated, and so they threw a fit, and then they said, "Oh no, we'll get rid of that one. Sorry, guys." Has that ever happened?
No.
No, and
no.
It never will.
No, because quests are different because, everyone I know has accepted quests as just being what they are. I mean, there are odd cases like the final dwarf quest in Kildegrim.
Yeah,
that was a horrible boss fight, And, yeah, you know, that people did raise their complaints about that, and they did eventually rewrite that, but it wasn't until a substantial time after.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know, you don't see this in any other area. I'm sure there are reasons. I'm not trying to, like,
yeah,
really come down on one group, but come on, guys, you know it was a mistake.
I have to agree.
You know what I mean? Like, you know it was a mistake.
Yeah. Because, you know, we can look at all these updates and we can say, this is good, this is bad, we don't like this, remove it and whatnot, but that doesn't get anyone anywhere. And I think that in order to teach the player base to accept updates and be able to, you know, have a little bit of give and take, Jagex also needs to be able to do that and have a little bit of give and take as well, which is fine in most cases, but, you know, just having something in-game that shouldn't be in-game isn't really helping anyone.
Yes,
you know, exactly. Like give and take, I think give and take would be, okay, we made a mistake here. You guys obviously like this. This is something we should look at for the other skills. Let's figure out a way to make this work with the Terran and Quiver and for, you know, have some kind of easier way to swap melee weapons. So,
yeah, and that should have been like, we're going to revert this, but we are looking into how to do this with all the combat styles so that it will be equal and balanced when we do release it. And what would have been the harm in that?
I mean, this comes from Bounty Hunter of all things. And I mean, who wants to go get Bounty Hunter points or whatever they're called these days?
Yeah. So, well, that's the ultimate irony, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one side of it. Now, the next one is actually very interesting that you bring up our discussion we had last week regarding old school, because I actually was thinking about this, and I think you said it on the show here, is that old school could potentially be driving RS3. And, mm-hmm. you know, I was chatting with Sirion about this, because that's what I do when there's something in my mind that needs to be rectified. I go to someone, and he was just there for this one. So the question, of course, is what drives more subscriptions, old school or RS3? Now, I'm going to simplify things here for the purposes of the podcast, because there will be an Informer article later this month coming out on this very subject, Jagex's financials. And let's just say right now that there's £55 million in subscription revenue, £29.2 million in terms of microtransaction revenue for the year ending December 31st, 2017. So let's just do some quick, simple rounding with this and say that 30 million of that microtransaction revenue is pure for RuneScape 3, because that's where it's made, mm-hmm. right? Now, let's just assume for a moment there's 60,000 old school players and 30,000 RS3 players. And the reason for this is it's a 60-30 ratio for easy math calculations. So what this means then, if you use the revenue models and the player base numbers we have, old school brings in £36.7 million of revenue. RuneScape 3 brings in £18.3 million of subscription revenue, plus that entire £29.2 million of subscription revenue, for a grand total of £47.6 million of revenue from RS3. So £11 million more for that. And
so we're over, but only because of MTX.
Correct. Now, keep in mind with this, the old school team is smaller, they probably have a lower budget, and they can move quicker with their updates, which is what gives old school its charm and gives its updates that people like and they vote on. Now, without microtransactions, it's clear that old school would be driving Jagex's profits and revenues. With microtransactions, RS3 and old school bring in a relatively even amount with that 60-30 player base split, but if you ultimately end up re-extrapolating this to 30-45 for RS3 to old school, as was the case in the summer of 2017, this means that RS3 is ultimately bringing in more per player than old school. And you drop everything on this, and this is what Parnassius said, old school on its own through its team is profitable enough to stand on its own and could support its own membership fee through this. But then we get to the problem of narrative regarding the old school membership fee. is the narrative, is that old school is doing so well and standing on its own, or we're just a money-hungry company who wants more, so we're choosing to pick on you now. And I think that's the question that would be asked within the old school community, and I think we know which way they would go.
Well, I don't think it should really matter anyway, because I don't know a lot of people that are old school players that play RS3 equally the same. And our prices do go up. I mean, they get raised. I actually think that it probably is time. I think you should either, you know, like Parnassia said, you could pay for a membership for old school, or you can pay for a membership for RuneScape 3, or you could get both in Premier, or you could pay a little bit more for both. I don't think that would be bad. Like, instead of, I mean, I don't know what the numbers would be, but to me, that would make more sense. I think last week, what I'm really worried and got a little, just what I'm worried about is it's the whole thing all in general. So the financial is one end, but the other part that I keep thinking about, I can't forget about what you guys brought back from RuneFest. I can't get that out of my mind. I can't forget that old school is getting the updates and they're doing the stuff that should be happening here, but it never happens here. All we get is more microtransactions. And then that makes me worry about, okay, well, here comes mobile. Well, old school mobile is working just fine. It's great. Everyone loves it. There's no microtransactions. So who's going to get hammered with MTX on mobile?
Mm-hmm. RS3. You know what mobile games are for?
Yeah. So, I mean,
especially in affluent markets.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. You know what I mean? It's the whole, like, we could pick out each piece and say, well, this works, but this doesn't work. But when you take it as a whole, that's what worries me. That's where I go, I don't know if I like where this is going. But I'm glad that RS3 is still producing, but I mean, think about it. I think that might prove my point, actually. If we were solely reliant on subscriptions, forget it. We're losing. And since they don't have MTX, isn't that really the more fair way of looking at it?
Not really, because it's a dollar value at the end of the day. At the end of the day, it all adds up on the balance sheet. So if it's revenue that comes from RS3, and I mean, we don't know that it's not split up that way in the document, but this is an extrapolation. Right. So,
well, you know, there's one way to fix it. One way to know for sure. Let's add MTX to old school. See how they like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And for anyone wondering, no, I'm not saying add that. I'm just saying, yeah, that would be a thing to see. And, you know, old school will be able to survive its own membership fee. And there's one way to guarantee that. You know what they always say, right? Follow the money.
Yeah. I mean, that's
And you just need true. To look at the number of people playing old school to do those old school to RS3 GP transfers. Jagex ain't clamping down on that. So there are people who will continue to do what they're doing in old school with their developed characters, transferring their gold to RS3, making oodles and oodles of profit, giving Jagex money on both, giving Jagex a bit of money on the RS3 side. Granted, not in a primary means, because if someone is making money on old school, transferring it to RS3, buying bonds, they're not necessarily doing it, but someone still bought that bond with $5 and is being redeemed for something on RS3.
Right. But I mean, don't you think that they could pay for their membership?
Like, oh yeah, definitely.
Like a membership, you could like pick which game, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think his idea is actually pretty good with
yeah,
that.
And I agree. And, you know, there's a reason why that's so good. That's a standard selling strategy, that if you're wanting to bundle something, cut the individual price down by a dollar or two, take it back down to $7.99 for one, and then have a combined one of, you know, like $12 or $13.
Yeah. I think that would make perfect sense. I don't know. I mean, dollar for dollar, yeah, we're bringing in more. But I worry at some point they're going to skin the sheep instead of shear it. And, you know, and if that happens, then a lot of people might just go, you know what, I'm just going to go to old school because they're getting the updates that we should be getting over here. They're more responsive to their community.
And that comes down to pipeline.
Maybe I just want to play this.
And that comes down to pipeline.
Yeah.
And that's something else we also talked about in this chat. And it's interesting how Parnassius' question is flowing from one thing to the other. We'll talk about the third thing in there after. And I didn't know this was coming as a question. I don't think I told Parnassius about this, but it's right on point. And, you know, with regards to the lack of updates, I can say with some good authority that, you know, there's 7 dev teams, 1 for microtransactions, 1 for mining and smithing, 1 for mobile, 1 for the extra large update that Timbo's on. This means that half the teams are currently tied up. The engine team is tied up with mobile, so nothing huge can get done. 2 months at a minimum, let's just say, to implement a small update, to bring an update out. Longer if it needs custom graphics or if it's bigger like the farm was. And then if you look at updates like deep sea fishing, safe cracking, and You Are It, these were the last of what people called the batch of regular updates earlier this year before the update pace slowed. And given the 2 month guesstimate that we have, it was roughly 2 months after these updates that things started to slow down and people started noticing things. And, you know, this brings up the question we also discussed last week regarding Menaphos. it wasn't expansions that failed. It's that content is played too quickly and people wanted a constant supply of content in game. They wanted it fresh. And the way that RS is set up with a month-to-month subscription, people will unsubscribe if they're not getting that fresh stream.
Yep.
And, you know, like it or not, the tones of today for people who are complaining about a lack of updates are similar to what we had after Menaphos.
Yeah. Well, the lead up to it even, you know, because, I mean, mm-hmm. it was that mm-hmm. that whole part of the year was just so dry. I mean, how many times did, you know, were you trying to make something out of not much? Like, there just wasn't much going on. And, you know, we kept being told, wait for Menaphos. And we thought we'd have 3 months of content to deal with that. And that's just not how it turned out.
We had about a month the way we split it out on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this is a good discussion to have in general, and it's something I think the community should be more aware of, and that's why it's actually going to be an Informer article this month in regards to the financials. I'm not going to give too much away, but the general question that I want to try and provide some insight on and maybe see if we can get some clarification on is how much of the money coming in, and this is a question we're not going to get answered, unfortunately, but we can make some guesses on it, is how much of the money coming into the company right now is from old school, and what does that mean for RS3 development in the terms of not, you know, which game is better and which one is the prime earner. We know that RS3 is the prime earner from the amount of money they brought in last year with subscriptions and microtransactions, but does the amount of money coming in ultimately at the end of the day, is that going to determine which game gets which updates? Or, as some of the people have already pointed out and alluded to, is RS3 going to be the cash cow on mobile? And is old school going to be the community driven game that receives updates that are updates and not necessarily microtransaction based exclusively?
And seeing that, just doesn't that seem like just very unfair?
Well, I mean, given that RS3 is the flagship, sure, but if I was looking at the balance sheet, I would say no.
But so once again though, if you whine and throw a fit, you get what you want. And if you don't, well, you get to make us money. So, to me, that seems kind of unfair. Like, RS3 should be just as... It should be the community-driven, well, to a point. To a point. But why is it that their community is getting it right and ours is getting it wrong? maybe that's a question we need to ask ourselves too. Like, they seem to be doing fine. I don't know.
Are they doing fine though? They don't have bot detection yet. They don't have the bot heuristics program RS3 does. They are still reliant on keeping the game looking exactly how it did in 2007, which, I mean,
but they have to.
I mean, it's old school, right? They have to.
But that's what they want. Like, they want that. That's what their community wants. I don't know.
No. You know what would be interesting to see? Would be an interesting thing to see. Let's just have a look at an update. Like, let's say Elite Dungeon. Not Elite Dungeon 2. That one had... Actually, yeah, Elite Dungeon 2. That one had some new resources in it. It had some old resources like the Lava Strike Worms and the Black Dragons and such. But it also had some new resources in it, like the map design itself and the bosses at it. So what I'd be interested to see, and this is another thing I doubt we'll ever see, is what is the cost breakdown on one of these updates? How much of the money spent goes to the graphic artists? How much goes to the animators? How much goes to the developers? And how much goes to the QA team at the end of the day? And how much goes to the general level of services that need to support the update, like the server teams and the web teams and the like. But basically, a breakdown on how much it costs to produce an update.
And that would be interesting. I'd like to see
that. And then compare that with old school and say, okay, so are they doing more with less? Or are we the highly funded team, but the updates this team is putting out is something that, aside from the player-owned farm, since the beginning of September, really hasn't drawn anyone's attention.
Well, I don't think they're doing more with less, necessarily. They're doing more with, like, I don't know. It doesn't cost them as much to do it, so...
Yeah,
I don't know.
And see, we're heading into the realm of conjecture here and inference based on this, and I don't want to make any statements that are wildly wrong on this case, but you can get the sense of where we're going and the kind of things we're going to be looking at on this, and I think it's something that most people in the community want to hear about, so we're going to be looking to go big for this one. And you know, I was worried about this too, and from the looks of it, we have microtransactions to thank for being the more profitable game.
Yeah. Whether that's a good thing or bad remains to be seen, yeah. Right?
And also, there's no way of knowing whether or not the money brought in from RS3 sticks with the RS3 side of it, or if it is spread around the entirety of the company. Based on where the company is structured up, I'm willing to bet that it's spread around and the money brought in from all these is treated as one entity and then it's spread around to old school, RS3, and of course undeveloped MMO as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jagex is a private company, so they're free to do exactly as they want. But if they were a public company, a publicly traded company, they would probably do well with doing something like what Google did and setting up a parent company, Alphabet, which looks after all their different companies. Because in Alphabet, you have Google, YouTube, Nest, and Wave, and all those other ones as well. So that's something Jagex could do if they ever do expand beyond just these two games. Interesting thoughts, nonetheless.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah,
good discussion.
And we're going to continue that right now with tech news. But first, if you guys want to send your own questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com or leave us a DM on Twitter or at @rsbnb. We always love hearing questions and responses to questions as well. So we're going to continue the gaming talk in tech news with a major egg on the face moment that Blizzard had when they revealed Diablo Mobile at BlizzCon. And, you know, in general, people weren't too pleased with this.
Oh, no, they booed.
They thought, maybe we could get like Diablo 3 or something like that, right? But
4.
4,
yeah.
Right, 4.
Yeah.
But nope. They're bringing Diablo Immortal to mobile, and this is developed in partnership with Blizzard and Chinese video game company NetEase. And boy, what do we see here? China once again. Mobile game.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Now,
no, I mean, I get it. Part of this had to do with hype and the clickbaity things, which kind of led people to believe there might be an announcement about Diablo 4. But the other part is they really misread their community because, I mean, Blizzard in general, but especially with Diablo, it's PC gamers kind of game. And they were not happy about mobile.
Yeah, it goes back to the late 90s Diablo, you know, Windows 95, 98. So it's got a long lineage and a lot like RuneScape. And, you know, I think we're seeing the tale of two mobile games here because everyone is pleased with the RS Mobile who's playing it and who has it on phones that work. But, you know, this is Blizzard developers, and one of them asked a question on Mike regarding this. Let's see, what was the question here? Here we go. I'm going to play the question. Hopefully there's no profanity in it.
Hey, just was wondering, is this an out-of-season April Fool's joke?
No, it's a fully-fledged Diablo experience on mobile, which everybody will get to play, and hopefully which will bring new heroes to Sanctuary, as well as welcoming our community back into it, and something we're very excited about.
I should say we're...
April Fool's joke.
Yeah, they were not happy. Not happy.
Now, I don't know much about the Diablo community or what the general sentiment is of it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm just going to assume that people were wanting Diablo 4, but the internet led them to believe that they might be hearing something on that. But in the end, we ended up hearing Diablo Mobile.
Yeah, I mean, and essentially that's it in a nutshell. And you know, I honestly don't know what the I mean, that was one of my first questions is like, why was the reaction so different between, you know, like the RS community and then the Diablo community with, because we were excited about mobile, right? I mean, and they are not. And mobile was probably, I can't remember for sure, but I'm sure it was, I'm guessing it was announced at RuneFest, right? Like a year or two ago?
No, it wasn't. Mobile was announced in the summer of 2017.
Oh, that little game.
The hashtag announcement thing that everyone thought was going to be RS remastered. that was a fun victory lap to take.
Right. So, you know, it's weird, but... I mean, because in a way, I mean, RuneScape's always, I mean, that's always been the PC gamer's game too. So, for all the similarities,
184,000 dislikes on their YouTube trailer.
Yeah, they really didn't like it. Really didn't like it. But, you know, I'm beginning to wonder if people are, if some people anyway, are getting fed up with all the mobile stuff. Because maybe what they realized, like, automatically was they're going to get microtransactions to death and they don't want it. Or maybe they're afraid that, well, we're not going to get Diablo 4 ever because all this time and money has to go into mobile now. And I think that's a legitimate concern because we are still struggling with that a little bit over here.
Yeah, yeah. They had a Future of Diablo video teasing multiple projects, and they feel that this has effectively taken Diablo 4 off the table. Also, they feel it's just a direct port of Diablo 3, which is out and old. And they wanted BlizzCon to be a celebration of the fans, rather than trying to be sold something. That they're calling an investor's board meeting pitch in one of these Reddit threads that are in the place that was blowing up. It goes on and on to say it and whatnot and transparency in here, but it sounds as though what I want to say is that they flubbed the release from a PR standpoint, and mm-hmm. Blizzard with the Diablo community doesn't have nearly the amount of goodwill that the RuneScape community had with Jagex last summer.
Yeah, I mean, and that's true. Well, and you know, it strikes me as something that Jagex does do well at RuneFest. It very much is like fan centered, right, Shane? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, so you know, whereas we didn't get the announcements that we were hoping for, it was still very fan centered, and it was still very much, you know, community,
a very positive kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, with this, this is also the other part of the chat that we had this weekend, Sirion and I, and it's just amazing that all these things are coming up this week. But you know, it comes down to the fact that companies like Blizzard and Jagex need to get their previews and social media hits out very quickly in the modern world. But there's a line between building too much hype and no communication at all. And I think with the future of Diablo and potentially people hoping for Diablo 4, that reached a tipping point there. Whereas with the announcement, no one had really thought of any formulated ideas of what RuneScape Remastered would be, aside from a tick-free client at the time, which was a horrendously stupid idea, since you could do that with NXT if they wanted to. So there's that. And this is all based on community perception, because this game is very much a prototype at this time. You know, Diablo Mobile is a prototype, just like RS Mobile was a prototype last summer. And it's all about community perception of what the devs are doing and the like. And as the one guy said in the thread, it's boiled down to feeling like an investor's board meeting rather than a community pitch. So looking at social media and how everything needs to be communicated out so quickly, there's always pressure at these things like BlizzCon and RuneFest and the like to have the next big thing to show. And the players in general, and the internet more so, have short attention spans on what's new and what's hip and the like. And I think that's what caused the issues with the RS3 reveals at RuneFest, and what caused the issues here with the Diablo reveal as well, is that, you know, they want their Diablo 4, but mm-hmm. they're not going to get it. And that's what the topic of the day is, and that's why you're seeing such a huge backlash against it, because it's the topic of the day, and that's what's being talked about on social. And, you know, with social, everything is a promotion and put out there to ultimately garner clicks and views. But at the end of the day, you know, Jagex tried to be honest with the RS3 reveals, but the players weren't happy with this. They expected the hype, as we've come to know it, with updates like RS Mobile and bigger game updates. And, you know, this comes down to something that you and I have talked about throughout all of 2018, Tanis. Managing expectations.
Yep. And a good portion of 2017.
Yeah, and I'm going to actually give Jagex a huge compliment here with this and say that everything that they've been working on in general, minus, you know, the dry spells that we're feeling and the lack of perceived updates on RS3, aside from all that, they're in a pretty good position with the community. And this is in large part due to all of the openness that they have. The openness at RuneFest, the openness on live streams, all the Q&As that they do, how they're all available on Twitter and the like. This is the openness of Jagex paying dividends. Whereas if Jagex were to flub something up at this point and they didn't have this openness, they would be having a Blizzard situation. Whereas anyone who plays Diablo or Overwatch, who do you know at those companies who are the devs? They don't have names. They're not Mm-mm. They're not present. It's a huge company. The only one you might know if you play Overwatch is Jeff Kaplan. But beyond that, you know nothing.
Yeah.
So this is actually a huge compliment to Jagex at the end of the day. I didn't intend on going this way, but looking at the Diablo debacle and comparing it with RS and everything we know, I think Jagex is actually doing pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, in that context,
of course.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And that's the most important context, because if they can control that message, and not flood things. They get that. But obviously, we're still having some messaging issues with update frequency and the like.
Well, and you can't go too far on the other end. You know, you always have to try to strike that balance. And I appreciate that they were cautious and they didn't overpromise and underdeliver. But you got to have a little bit of vision that you can share with people. So I kind of feel like they did do much better than Blizzard did. But I thought maybe they pulled back just a little bit too much.
Yeah. And you know, that's in regards to the community. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Interesting how this all ties together. And of course, Jagex is watching this because, you know, we're watching this. They definitely are watching this to make sure they don't make a similar mistake in the future. And hopefully they hear what we had to say on this too.
Yeah.
Next up, Samsung is pioneering something they're calling the One UI, which they're putting out to make large phones easier to use. You know, you have an iPhone Plus. I have an iPhone Plus. You know, it's. I think we can both agree that it's kind of hard to touch the top corner of the screen, isn't it?
Oh well, yeah, yeah.
And you know, we have a feature on iOS called Reachability. You double tap the home button and it brings the entire screen down, and away you go. Which is fine, but it feels kind of like a crutch, I think, to, you know, pop up an app without needing to do that. And what Samsung is doing to combat this is they're bringing out something called One UI, and this is their new user experience for all Samsung smartphones. And this is basically a way of making the phone easier to read and easier to use. And this is in large part due to Google's influence with Android Pie. And the idea behind this is that most of the actionable parts of the user interface should be at the bottom half of the screen where they're all within reach of your thumb. So you don't need to reach up to the very top corners of your screen in order to do things. And Samsung at their conference this week is calling this the most user-focused smartphone user experience that it has produced to date. And effectively, all of Samsung's built-in apps that you get on a Samsung phone will now have a viewing area, which is going to be a big and easy-to-read header text, then an interaction area that's in the lower half or lower third of the screen to make interacting with the device a lot easier. So this is their solution to it. And, you know, that's one way of doing it. Another way is to, I guess we're heading this direction with medium-sized smartphones, you know, with the iPhone XS and XR. You can have more screen real estate, but you don't have the huge footprint of, you know, an iPhone Plus or a Pixel XL, so to speak. But Samsung says that One UI and Android 9 Pie will be released for the Galaxy S9, S9 Plus, and Note 9 starting in January 2019. So Samsung users can look forward to that. And, you know, this has always been an issue with large smartphones, and Samsung phones in general have had crap UI compared to the Googles of the world. So we'll just have to wait and see what this looks like next year and the following year to see if they're learning from the methodologies that Google has put in place with Android and see if this helps accessibility at all. Because I know that's a big issue for you, accessibility, and that's why you stick with iOS.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but if you have a Samsung phone, would be interested to hear what you think of this and if you find this at all useful, or if you're not having any problems at all right now as well. But this is, of course, for the huge phones, and we all know how huge Samsung's phones can get, much bigger than the iPhone and even the Pixel. So they're effectively tablets, I'd say, at this point. So
yeah, well, at least this one isn't catching fire.
Yeah, so. It's not catching on fire. It's not exploding. So that's good. That's good. The next one is folding, though, this week. Samsung also announced the first foldable smartphone.
Foldable? Is this... Are we talking about a flip phone?
No, like, but...
Are we going back to the flip phones? What?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way, but that's a good way of thinking about it. So this is a phone that can open up to ultimately become a 7.3-inch tablet. But if oh. you're just needing a phone, you can fold it up and you have a pocket-sized device. So the idea behind this...
Who uses a phone? Come on.
So the idea behind this is you would have one device, you could unfold it and you got your tablet, fold it up and you got the phone again. And they're doing this with what they're calling their Infinity Flex display. And, you know, we have some pictures of how it's going to work. You can kind of see the various aspects of it and the fact you can fold it in the middle. There's lots of questions about, you know, whether or not this will increase wear and tear on it, because, as you know, with OLED screens, which are the high-end LCD displays that are currently used in smartphones, is that they're actually a membrane that lights up, and, you know, if you fold them back and forth, you got to wonder what's going to happen over time with this. So there's questions about that. There's also questions of, okay, we can have these phones, but we like how thin our phones are right now. Does this mean we're going to be effectively doubling the size of this? So there's lots of questions that are still out there, but power usage and whatnot. But what you can see here is that there's a little GIF where they unfold it and it becomes a tablet. And that's all there is to it. This is supposed to launch in 2019. Only question is, how much is this going to cost?
Yeah, I'm skeptical. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of skeptical.
Yeah. And, I mean, it might be the best thing for usability since sliced bread. But at the same time, when has Samsung ever pioneered something on usability, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if Apple had announced this technology and had announced a unique way of bringing it to the phone and why you would need this and why this is replacing the iPad mini, sure, you could definitely see something there. Apple could probably sell that, but would they? No, I think they're just more interested on iterating on what they got currently right now. So, but I don't know. I've always found LCD technology interesting, specifically foldable LCDs and LCDs that are actually transparent as well, and then that fill in the screen with the projection as we see it now. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, 2019, we'll have to watch on this, and comparisons were drawn to back in 2012 when they first launched the Galaxy Note with a 5.3-inch display that people called enormous. 5.3 inches was called enormous, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
I'm not going to make any jokes.
Okay, good. Thank you. You ready to move on to other things?
Yeah, let's move on to other things.
So, you're cooking.
Oh, I'm cooking. I'm cooking.
14.4 million XP gained so far. Second place is Flash with 11.3. And third place, we have Sorensen with 10.7 million XP gained.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And, yep. You know, good showing all around. We also got Brew 3 with 2.6 and Sunset Fish with 1.3. So, five people over the 1 million mark in this competition. So,
yeah, well,
are you guys saving it all for Double XP weekend?
Am I? I don't even know if I'm going to be here for Double XP weekend. Yeah, no,
all right.
I'm not worrying. I'm not even thinking about that. I'm going day by day, and hopefully my luck will hold. I've never lost a cooking competition yet, so.
All right, fingers crossed. See. And yeah. Also, just a reminder, you can also sign up for our RuneScore competition at rsbnb.com/sc22. SC as in Sierra Charlie /22. And of course, links in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. All right, what do we got for achievements this week?
Well, we have a few, starting with Varangi Bard. 99 defense on November 6th, and then YT Spooky with 99 defense on November 6th, and then Cool Banksy with 99 fishing November 5th. Love that name. That's cool. Varangi Guard Varangian Bard. Ah, okay, it's something like that. And it's not, he's got 99 invention on November the 4th. Varangian Bard with 99 constitution on November 4th.
Nicely done. And while you were doing that, if we would have had the video going, people would have seen me spill water all over my shirt.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. next up, Hillel Bacon with 99 Hunter on November 4th. Yeah, nice name there, definitely. Eric's with 99 Runecrafting on the 4th as well. Vodka B with 120 Herblore on the 3rd. Derpelt New with 99 Herblore on the 3rd. And Fintum with 99 Runecrafting on November 2nd. All right.
Nice. Nicely done. Yeah, good job, guys.
Nicely done. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
All righty. Time for pick of the week. This one is something that I don't know if most people have heard of it. Have you ever heard of something called Trello before?
No.
Are you interested in to-do lists?
Well, my wife is.
Okay. Well,
to give them to me.
Well, Trello is a free service. You can upgrade your plan if you so desire. But the idea behind it is that you create boards for various different things. Like I have an RSVNB board, I have a Star Trek Online board, that kind of thing, so on and so forth. And what you can do is you can basically have a supercharged to-do list. You can add notes to it. You can add collaborators to it and add people to it. And it's just a basic way of keeping track of what needs to be done. And you could group them into different baskets as well. You can set deadlines and the like, and as well. So if they need to be done by Friday, you can put that in. Or if you have other things that you're just thinking of, you can use it as kind of a board for that as well. And you know, there's only a couple of complaints I have about it. Number one, it doesn't support images from the top-down view on the board view. And secondly, everything is locked into a grid format. So I can't move and move things around as if I had, you know, like a whiteboard or a corkboard. So you unfortunately can't do that. You guys might recall I talked about Microsoft Whiteboard before on the podcast, whereas that's more of a collaborating feature. With this, Trello is more of a to-do feature with a similar kind of user interface. It's also got apps for all the various mobile platforms. It works in your web browser and the like. So it's just something that's good for tracking things that need to be done. And you know, when you think about it, when it comes down to it at the end of the day, if you're more organized, it can put your mind at ease. So if you're that kind of person, you should definitely have a look at Trello. Trello.com.
Sounds like that would be good for RuneScape dailies. So you can just go down through your list.
Oh, yes, it would. Oh, yes, it would. Believe me, it would. And, you know, you can make stuff that are you can make things marked as read and unread and the like and so on and so forth. So, yeah, you could definitely use it for that. You could use it for practically anything under the sun that you want. So,
cool.
Yeah. Trello, Trello.com. Completely free. You don't need to pay for anything if you don't want to.
We got a lot free.
Indeed. Alrighty. What you been up to on RS?
Cooking.
Of course.
Shake and bacon. I helped. Yeah, that's all I've been doing.
Okay. Are you able to reveal anything that you have been cooking, or you want to keep that secret?
Oh man, you know, I'm just cooking the normal stuff, you know, like catfish and maybe some pizzas, okay. You know.
You gonna do like that pizza achievement where you can sample all the pizzas that are in the world?
That'd be kind of cool. I do kind of want to do that one.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So just working on the competition then. All right. Fair enough.
Yep.
Nothing else.
No, really, nothing else. I mean, I take that back. I did make a special outfit for... Oh, wait, no, I did that last week. Never mind. No, just cooking.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. Well, this week for me on RS, just been working towards Double XP weekend and such for the plans. And, it's always interesting going up to these weekends, because it's a question of how much time am I going to be spending? What am I going to be doing with it and the like? And, I think this one, nothing has come up yet, so I should have plenty of time to do what I want to do. And I actually had some good news in that the potions I made last weekend had actually gone up to almost where they were at right before that Double XP weekend, so I sold them. So I actually have a decent cash stack now to work with this time around.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in the nick of time, right?
Yeah, it was. It was, and I checked the day after that. Oh, okay, they're going back down again. I made a good choice to sell when I did.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be making super melee potions. So, if anybody has flasks or supersets lying around, I'll meet up with you and make a deal, because you can only buy up to 1,000 every 4 hours.
Gotta love those buy limits.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Don't you have any RAF accounts, Shane? You can just help yourself out there.
Oh yeah, I never thought of that. I mean, I guess you could do that, but that's not really my kind of thing.
Well, okay.
Just beyond that, I think I'll just take a moment to mention as we're wrapping this up that if you want to sign up for that achievement bonanza, just head on over to that website, rsbnb.com/sc/22, and enter in all of your pertinent info with that, sign up, and away you go. So maybe I'll get some farming achievements done in the week following leading up to that as well.
That ought to be a fun one, and hopefully everyone enjoys it so that I can maybe get in it the next time we do it, because it's nice that you're not stuck the whole time. You can just come in, do a couple achievements, or go on something else.
Yeah,
or
the only problem is for people who have rune score in the 17, 18, 19, 20,000 range is that it becomes increasingly harder to do.
So. Yep. So don't do it if you're planning on ever doing one of these competitions.
And that starts Monday the 12th at midnight game time reset. So midnight UTC.
Okay.
All right. I don't believe we have anything else for this week. We have battled the hordes, made our way through the achievement bonanza, talked about Lucien, and had our existential crisis of the week.
Yes.
Regarding totally. The position of RS3 in the RuneScape pecking order. So with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update, where we will be discussing the mining and smithing beta. For better or for worse, hopefully nothing comes down with the sky falling on that. So that should be a good one. If you guys want to join us in game, we're at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. You can also follow us on Twitter at RSBNB. And I'll just mention the Patreon again, since there's some new stuff on there that we're working towards at patreon.com/RSBNB. And that being said, we'll see you next week, everyone. Take care.
Take care. See ya.